Well, hello and welcome, everybody. We've got a new edition of Millennial NFT Podcast. We're super excited to kick off this season. We've got a great lineup. We've got a lot of interesting guests and a lot of activity going on in the blockchain NFT space that we're excited to share with our audience. I'm in the office. So our first guest today is a gentleman that I have luckily enough become friends with, acquaintance over the last couple of years, gentleman John Mirkonis. And John has a very unique background in the space, in the sense that he actually has a pretty deep title background, but also has a very deep blockchain and technology background. What we typically find when we stumble across different people is they typically are either heavy title, very little in the technology piece, or vice versa. So it's great to have him on. And without further ado, I'd like to welcome you to the podcast, John, and let you introduce yourself.
Well, Chip, I appreciate the opportunity to chat with you on your podcast. I was looking forward to it for many, many months. And finally, we're here, and I look forward to the next 45 minutes or so. John Mirkonis. I'm originally from New York, but I've lived in many different places throughout the United States and into South America as well. But I have a 25-year background in commercial real estate. That was followed up by a few years of being a real estate tech consultant when I lived in Brazil. And that's when I got associated with companies like CoreLogic and a couple of others out of Silicon Valley that were down in South America looking to set up a business or to develop a product in Latin America, which had been my focus. Fast forwarding, or backtracking, if you will, I ended up back in New York City after Brazil and worked in economic development there as a follow-up. So I was working with the New York City Economic Development Group on projects in the outer boroughs, in Queens and in the Bronx. What happened was in 2016, I heard about Bitcoin. And I was intrigued by it, and I was ready to buy some. This is when the Bitcoin was about $600 a pop. When the platform started asking me for my driver's license and information where I lived and bank accounts, I got cold feet. I did not know who they were, so I'm somewhat of a risk-averse person. I did not buy any Bitcoin at that point, but quickly learned about the architecture under Bitcoin, which of course is now blockchain, many blockchains. So having been in New York City, Chip, I pivoted and became a consultant in real estate and the blockchain technology space. And so now I have a little company called Power Chain Consultancy, and we advise startups primarily who are in real estate, who want to implement or adopt blockchain technology for their processes, or tech companies are looking to get into the commercial real estate, global commercial real estate space.
No, that's a really interesting background in the sense, like I said, that you have those traditional title background space, and that you've also, stumbled upon the Bitcoin piece and then taken it to where you are today. So let's talk about sort of just jumping off, talk about your entry point and how you are working with some of these groups, such as, is it Fibri? Is that how you pronounce it?
Fibri, it's the Association for Blockchain and Real Estate Expertise, Fibri, that's right. Yeah.
And GBA. So tell the audience a little bit about your introduction to those groups, because I think they're probably a resource that a lot of people don't know about, but that has so many interesting people involved in them, and also just has done so much work in the space to date that I would champion, encouraging more people to get involved. I think it could really move the needle. So talk a little bit about your involvement and what you've been, how it sort of led you to where you are right now.
Yeah, that's a terrific question. One thing I didn't mention yet, which I will now, because it ties in with GBA, the Government Blockchain Association, based in Washington, D.C., is my 7 years of work in the title insurance industry. primarily with First American Title. I was VP for business development, and I was hired to open up the country of Brazil. So with my background in commercial real estate, in general, title insurance, which lends itself to land registries, land governance, I became very interested over the years in land registries, especially in developing countries. This will tie in a second. I know it doesn't quite make tie in yet. So in 2017, the Government Blockchain Association was formed. They asked me to join. I joined, and they also asked me to start up a chapter, or a working group rather, which is the Land Registry Working Group. So since then, I've been the leader of the Land Registry Working Group based on my interest in land registries, improving them, land governance, improving that process. And so I've been with GBA since then. And GBA, of course, is dedicated primarily to the government sector, all government sectors for blockchain. So that's GBA.
Okay.
Now, Chip, you mentioned FIBRE, and this is a mouthful, but it's the Foundation for International Blockchain and Real Estate Expertise. This is a nonprofit based out of the Netherlands. It started up in 2018 in Europe, European Union, where they established six or seven chapters right away with a board of directors based there. I knew some of the guys who were started this up, Chip, and they were startups as well. And I quickly realized that this is a group I wanted to be involved with an association, because it's FIBRE is 100% dedicated to the intersection of blockchain and real estate on a global basis for all sectors.
Right.
Title insurance, land registry, transactional, tokenization, and so on. So I established the first chapter for FIBRE in New York before I got smart and moved to Florida. And I love New York, but I moved to, so I established the first chapter in the States. We then subsequently established eight more chapters, and I moved to Florida. I established the Miami chapter, and now I'm the chair of the Florida State chapter of FIBRE, because there's so much going on. We needed a state level organization for that. So that's FIBRE, FIBRE.org.
And tell me a little bit about sort of, we'll start with FIBRE. Some of the things that you all do to explore, promote, move this intersection between blockchain and real estate forward, because I know it's very active. I would encourage folks that listen to this podcast, and we'll talk about how you can contact John at the end of the show, but he has a great LinkedIn profile and posts a lot of good information. I actually share and take some of it. I don't call it my own. I just comment on it or share it. But no, talk a little bit about what you all are doing, some of the behind the scenes, and then maybe some of the stuff that we see from the general public.
Yeah, sure. This is really important to kind of mention what FIBRE is doing. And you sort of mentioned it already, Chip. It's an educational group. We outreach to people all over the world who are interested in real estate and blockchain. You don't necessarily have to be working in it, but if you're interested in new technologies, innovation for the real estate space, FIBRE is the only organization in the world that focuses on it. And we do a lot of education. We do webinars, which are recorded, and they are on the website. It's a great networking tool. I am in constant contact but the cool thing, Chip, is I'm in contact with not only you here in the U.S., but other like-minded people throughout the world, Southeast Asia, Europe, Latin America. So it's a great platform to connect with other like-minded people, discuss things and learn new things. Speaking of learning, we produce one of our best resources, we believe, is the annual industry report that we put out every year in June. This is that past June. We published the fourth one, 2022. And this annual industry report, I think, for people who are interested in blockchain and real estate or are still learning, it's a great tool to download that for free and learn quite a bit.
Yeah, I actually downloaded it. I was a bit overwhelmed because it's like 200 pages, and I was like, oh my gosh. But it's structured in a way that if you wanted to just, let's just say you were very focused on one segment, you could dive into that, and it's more bite-sized pieces of information. So I think it's constructed in a user-friendly fashion, So, you know, I would encourage people, don't get intimidated by, you know, nowadays we've all been trained by USA Today that we only like to, you know, read an article that's, you know, what is it, 400 words max, or else we just lose interest. So this you could still, sometimes it's good to do a little bit more of a deep dive. That's really good. I know also you were involved with the Florida Business Blockchain Association, and you put together a real estate committee advisory panel that I was lucky enough to get on and am still involved in. So kudos to you just in general for your willingness and your dedication to really spreading this information and you know, our perspective where we've landed on a lot of this is, at the end of the day, it is about collaboration, engagement that will drive where ultimate adoption lands. Because as we know, if we just try to come at this from one perspective, one, it can get a bit polarizing, but two, you can really miss the mark, I think. And that's where I'm. We did a diagram of all of the different parties in a real estate transaction, and we did it in a, you know, we did a full flow diagram, and it's pretty amazing the amount of touch points there are. And so I think where people get defensive around this is there's a lot of stakeholders, and everybody which is a natural tendency or instinct, is trying to defend their turf. And so if they are concerned that there's going to be this mass disruption of their part of the transaction, they get very defensive. So I think taking a constructive approach of, hey, let's get all of the parties to the table. Let's educate people around what tools are available, how these tools can help either make it more secure, make it more efficient, make it more cost effective. And probably the biggest thing that I would share, make it more open to the public so that we have more participation. And so that really ties into some of the things that you're working on now. And I wanted to talk through that with you. You're involved in some private sector projects that are really cool. I know you're not at liberty to share all of the information, but I would love to hear what you can share with the public at this time. And then hopefully maybe we do a follow-up in 6 months, because that's how quickly a lot of this stuff is moving. But yeah, if you don't mind sharing with some of the projects you're working on, that'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said in the beginning, I work with primarily startups in the space, which typically need a lot of help in a lot of different areas, from financing, funding, to tech, although the tech part is actually pretty much taken care of with what we have today online. One thing I wanted to go back to, though, Chip, was you mentioned disruption in the space. And certainly, I've been through transactions many times. It's a cluster of people and activities and information flow. I like to think of it not so much a disruption that blockchain and related technologies bring, but it's a repair of what is a fragmented, a broken system. And I feel very strongly about that. Right now, I'm selling my condominium here in Florida. My agent is not using a CRM or any other or blockchain technology. We're doing this transaction, Chip. At least millions of people are doing with emails, messaging, texts, videos, and, you know, a couple other things. And it's just a mess of how we're communicating. It would be great to have one piece of architecture where everybody could jump on and communicate. And in fact, my agent has two email addresses we're using.
Yeah, that makes it. Yeah.
So anyway, I wanted to mention that it's not just we're going to repair it in a sense. The other thing I wanted to share before I talk about my startups and my work with them is this education. You're very much into education, Chip, as I am, as many people are, within Fibre or outside of it. You know, there was a Greek philosopher that once said, knowledge is power. And I found that fascinating because That's a very centralized train of thought to have power, right? I like to paraphrase that and say shared knowledge is even much more powerful. Decentralized knowledge and knowledge share. Extremely important. This is what your podcast does. This is what Fibre does and so on. But anyway, getting back to the startups and my main line of work, I work with startups that, again, are either in the real estate space or on the tech side. One company I'm working with now is a company called Rialto Group. They have an application or a platform called Rialto Apps. It's a pure tech company, and they provide technology services to any player, all players in the real estate space. It's pure tech. They don't create marketplaces per se. So they will bring in the technology to run your platform, your business, really, and provide everything from the beginning to the end, front end to the back end. And and it's primarily associated with tokenization, right? Which is the hot button right now in this industry. We are dabbling and we're looking at and touching at NFTs, NFT clubs, NFT market spaces, and as you can imagine, like everybody wants to get into the metaverse. So, but we're actually focused on STOs and providing minting of tokens for companies. Another company that I just started to advise about a month ago is a company in Brazil. And this is very cool, Chip. This is a company that also wants to disrupt or maybe repair a broken system in Brazil, which is very similar to other Latin American countries where no MLS system exists. This is a platform that will connect, where you can list your property and then connect to the other disparate platforms out there in the country, which are there five or six. It's a way of connecting an owner's property to disparate platforms, sort of creating a more cohesive marketing tool for owners and agents to communicate their offerings. And so I'm working with that company is called Landetta, landetta.com.br, and it's run by an extremely intelligent guy who is a tech guy, and we're trying to help him move his platform forward. Again, startup needs a lot of work. They need a marketing team, promotion team, tech support, and financial support. So that's very exciting, this one in Brazil. And there's a couple of others that I'm working with that I can't mention that are out there in the United States. And they are involved with, this particular one is involved with energy, land, and net zero affordable housing, which is quite an interesting thing. So there's a lot of touch points with this particular company that I also run.
Very cool. Well, if you don't mind, without going too deep in the weeds, talk a little bit about the tokenization. I feel very strongly that, when I'm talking from an education and a mindshare perspective to groups, I share with them that tokenization is here. Now, has it reached mass adoption? No. Is it still, in essence, potentially sort of what we'd almost call like a it's a cottage industry? But when you really look at use case and you look at utility of this and where it is in the life cycle, it's probably the closest thing that I can put my finger on right now that is really going to impact the people that I work with. So if you'll just touch on just sort of high level, sort of what your perspective is around the tokenization, where we are, and then we can talk a little bit about where it's going.
Okay. Well, first of all, as I mentioned earlier, it's sort of the hottest topic in the real estate and blockchain space, fractionalization of properties or funds.
And that you nailed it. Just, give people, and most of our listeners maybe not even understand what tokenization really does.
Slicing and dicing a property into pieces where you can mint tokens, if you will, that represent your fractional share, these tokens, and you can buy and sell them, exchange them potentially. But let me give you the, 36,000 altitude level look from my perspective. And I think this is part of why there's so much froth and excitement about this real estate market. The global residential and commercial real estate market is a whopping $228 trillion market globally. I mean, this is big. But only 3% of the population, global population, invests in real estate. There's a huge disparity here. Mm-hmm. But this is, Chip, this is a really crazy point. But 80% of the population believes real estate is a good investment. But only 3% are invested. So that's what the people in this space, the tech guys and the real estate guys like us, are thinking about tapping into this $228 trillion marketplace. And rightfully so. About 4 years ago, I had a whiteboard in my office, and I was writing down and listing all the tokenization companies. There were probably about 20 or 25 back in early 2018. There are over 100 now in the space globally that are doing tokenization work. So, but there was a study done by a group called Moore Global International Advisory and Accounting Network. This is interesting. What they researched was that if 0.5% of this market, the $228 trillion market, 0.5% were to be tokenized from over the next 5 years, that would be an $114 million market. That's people are salivating over that. Trust me.
Yeah.
And tokenization is a way to tap in and grab your piece of the market share.
Well, and also, you know, one thing to just jump in that, you know, a study that I saw is that if you're able to accomplish what tokenization, the elements of tokenization provide, a landholder is because of the price discovery opportunity and the accessibility, the liquidity event ability to be able to get in and out of the investment and the ability to open the marketplace up, that you get up to like a 12% premium valuation on the property. So just think about that. If you've got, you know, a $5 million portfolio of properties and you're able to tokenize those and you're able to extract, you know, let's just say 6 million, you know, what have you, well, in that case, 5.5 million. I mean, even if you just get a 10% lift, that's a really powerful tool. So I think when people look at tokenization and think about it, and if you're, you know, if you're a true, you know, investor specifically, it just affords you so much more flexibility and opportunity with these projects. And I know Rialto, the company that you're working with, by providing that backbone, the tech stack piece of it, which is really where I think most people get tripped up. They don't want to do all of that. You know, it's like going to an attorney and getting all your LLC docs documented out and having to jump through all the hoops. That's what really keeps people out of real estate. But what you all are building is going to make this, especially for the you know, what we're seeing emerging marketplaces where people are very, you know, very comfortable with using smartphone capabilities and technology to move, you know, to do investments. So I'll let you opine a little bit more on that, but I just thought I'd mention that.
Well, you touched on a couple of really important points, which I think your audience should be aware of. And I think they are to a certain extent, but let's touch on those two things that are challenges or barriers, or I wouldn't call them barriers. I'll just call them challenges right now in this time and space. The first is the investor market. Who will be or who are buying these fractions represented by tokens? I don't think the investor market is quite developed yet, because the startups that I work with, mid-sized enterprises, are all somewhat struggling. I've minted 1,000 tokens, they're $50 a piece. Who's going to buy them? What they want to do is tap into that 3% population that invests and grow that up, right? Well, that's a challenge. And when you're looking at retail investors, the smaller investors that are not accredited, not the institutional, of course, just to separate those two.
Right.
So that's one part of it. And you touched on something earlier, Chip, and that is the secondary market. How well developed are the secondary markets where these tokens are exchanged or sold, purchased? There is no international exchange. The national exchanges we have right now, which do some cross-border work. They're not as well developed or mature quite yet. So I think that needs to be further developed and fleshed out in order for us to reach that liquidity point of 12%, which, by the way, I've heard is up to 20% sometimes too on the liquidity premium. So those are two issues. Let's touch base on the investor market. I have a theory on this, Chip, and I could be wrong. I think the investor market moving forward is going to be focused more on, and I'm talking about the retail investor market, is going to be focused more on millennials, Gen Z, and Gen X.
Right.
Why? Well, first of all, those are the ones, Gen Z and Gen X are the ones that are buying cryptocurrencies. Why not buy a token, which is sort of like a cryptocurrency, but it's a lot safer, less risky,
right,
backed by real. Okay, but this is, and I want to share an interesting tidbit, a fact that supports my theory here. In the United States, in the first quarter of last year, it was announced I didn't have a source at the time, but it was a sort of a LinkedIn post or something. For the first time in history in the United States, last year, the first quarter, over 50% of the population is now Gen Z and Gen X. Wow. That is huge. This article said it was 58%. I didn't have a source, so I actually went to the census tracts, and this is, sometimes I do these things to double check, and it was not, I counted the age groups. It was not 58, it was over 60% Gen Z and Gen X and some millennials. The millennials were born between 1981 and 1996, and this was the first generation that grew up in the internet age.
Mm-hmm.
Smartphones, the internet, social media, they constitute 22% of the population. Gen Z, the Gen Z folks, late 1990s, early 2010s was their birth range. They account for the 20% of the U.S. population. Gen Z right now is the largest generation in American history. Okay, let's go down to Gen X. They were born between 1965 and 1980. They're about 20% of the population. And then after that, you have old folks like me, not you, Chip, the baby boomers, between 1955 and 1964. We grew up on Lotus 1-2-3, floppy disks, 8-track, and so on.
Now you're speaking some weird language. I mean, I always joke that half of my jokes don't go over because, if you're younger than – if you're a millennial or a Gen Z, you just don't get it.
Right, but so my point is, this I think helps support these folks are driving the bus. They're on the
yep.
bus, be driving the bus, and I think again going back to who the investor market is, I think these folks, the Gen Z, Gen X, especially those two, are the ones who want to be able to buy a property or a piece of a property with a click of a button, which they're doing now with other products on Amazon.
Well, and I would even jump in and say that. They want mobility in across everything. I mean, it's whether it be, Uber, DoorDash, what have you. And I'm not suggesting that buying a home is a click, but I would suggest that in Coinbase is actually what I would, is where I see, they really move the market in the cryptocurrency, the coin side of things by how the interface, the intuitive ability to do things. So I see as this landscape matures in the tokenization, and I think you agree with me, there's going to be some winners. There's going to be some big players that come in and really take on the ecosystem to own it, whether it be, and I don't have any theories per se, but let's just say Amazon decided they wanted to get in the tokenization space. There's always been this backdrop that they wanted to get in the real estate space. I mean, that's been the whisper for 10 years now. They almost were very frustrated that Zillow was the one that jumped in and really, what I would consider shifted the market. I think that we're close, and I'd like to end it on this question. Well, there's this question, and then we'll do our takeaways of how they can get in touch with you and learn more about what you're doing. But let's talk about the tipping point. What do you foresee? I mean, what the crystal ball, and if we all knew, we wouldn't probably be on the Chip Chat podcast. We'd be on a boat somewhere. But if what's your theory of when we're going to reach some critical mass around getting, and I think tokenization really is probably the is first in line. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to be the biggest changer of how we do things, but I would suggest, because, and here's why I say it, because investors typically are, we would suggest, are more educated, and they also understand risk. And I think that when you're talking about new technology, new ways of doing things, those are involved. And so they sort of, you know, as we can get more definition around accredited versus non-accredited and who can participate in these ecosystems, I think that'll be the first step. I think the more traditional markets will just follow along because they just have a lot more to hash through from a regulatory and a, you know, a compliance piece. But I want to hear your perspective on that.
This comes up a lot, you know, this question of the future and tipping point, mass adoption, whatever that is. It comes up all the time in conferences, seminars, and here we are talking about it again, which is a good thing. Let me quote Peter Drucker, who is an educational theorist. Peter Drucker has wrote several books on business evolution. He once said, the best way to predict the future is to create it. And this is what hundreds or thousands of these younger folks, Gen Z and Gen X, are doing, creating these platforms create this future of tokenization, let's say. I think we're a ways off. I believe that the technology for killer applications in this space is inadequate to lure, to bring customers, bring the public online to start buying fractions or other things with blockchain in the real estate space. It's not there yet, the killer application. So I often think about, I dream about creating a killer application, and I'd be on a boat in the Bahamas. But I think we're and it's interesting. One of my conferences, I'll say 3 to 5 years to answer your question, that this mass adopted, if you will.
Right.
Probably 5 years. There are some that contradict me and say, no, it's closer to 1 or 2 years. And that depends upon your risk tolerance and your hype volume, right? The hype volume. But I think many people agree it's not here yet. In 3 to 5 years, it will be. We have to have the right applications. We have to have the public involved in wanting to buy stuff with a token, you know, buy a token. So that would be my prediction, 3 to 5 years.
Okay, well, good. Well, you know, just as a follow on to that, and then we'll talk, we'll get how we can get in touch with you for future discussions. You know, where we sit, John, and you and I have had some offline conversations. I share your sentiment there. I think it's our job to bring the education and then to bring some tools to the general public and let them give us feedback and guidance around, okay, this makes sense, this doesn't, I'm comfortable with this, I'm not comfortable with this. And so, you know, we are introducing it's the Millennial NFT. It's a digital twin. It'll be on the Ethereum blockchain. It'll be a replication of your property ownership. Our goal in that is not to create any legal utility at this point, because we would be skipping multiple steps that need to take place. But what we want to do is bring collaboration and feedback and community so that we can get early adopters, you know, engaged and sharing ideas. And I would also suggest, and you said it earlier in the podcast, that there's a lot of technology that's already been built. And we just have to figure out ways to put it together in a useful and yet make it where the utility of it makes sense, and that the interface makes sense for the consumer. That's always a challenge, and you know, killer apps, and that's a great way to put it. But one thing that's come out of probably the last 2 years, and that's really when we got involved in the space, is there's been a ton of money that's flown into the blockchain technology space. And a lot of it's been around the cryptocurrency coin market. Obviously, we know that has been lumpy and there's been some headwinds there. For us, we see it candidly as an opportunity because the technology doesn't go away. It's built and its frameworks are there. It's how do you leverage that technology? So my last sort of takeaway is for the people listening, how can they get in touch with you? And then are there other places that you would suggest that they go to learn more about some of the things you're working on and things that you feel passionate about?
Well, first of all, if anybody's interested in communicating with me and or getting some use cases on tokenization or use cases on land registry, I have a whole library of use cases for land registry for folks who are interested in that. You know, the county recorder's offices, I have 10 use cases global on that topic and plenty on the tokenization space. So my email is jmarkunas@powerofchain.com, jmarkunas at my company name, powerofchain.com. That's the best way.
Awesome.
In terms of for folks who are just getting into the space or even at my level where I still continue to need to learn, the internet is a great place to go. Now, I've often said in the past, just when you go to Google, type in blockchain and real estate. Granted, you're going to get 1,000 pop-ups, but then you can pick and choose what you might be interested in. And you also find some good research articles done by PwC and Deloitte and some of these heavyweight institutional tech companies. That's a place I'd go to as well. Another thing, if you want to get a deeper dive into some of these companies that are doing blockchain for real estate, blockchain for tokenization, or blockchain for title insurance, blockchain for the whole real estate transaction process, is find the companies that are doing it and read their white papers. The white papers have a lot of information, not only on the tech that they're going to be using, but how they're going to be attacking the marketplace. And they also often give roadmaps on how they're going to get there. Some white papers are well written, some aren't. But the white papers, I would download a few of those and on a weekend.
No, good. That's great stuff. And I think the big takeaway is there is a ton of information. I always encourage people, podcasts are a great spot. Know the framing because, sometimes, I used to joke, if you get into crypto Twitter, be careful. There's a lot of nefarious characters. And that's all based on what your definition of nefarious is. But there's people with agendas. We know that. And buyer beware with anything that you're sort of reading and working on. But John is involved in a lot of these groups that have these nonprofit, and they really, if you do the research, you'll understand that it is based on education and discovery. It's not about some half-baked business plan to try to raise money or do this or that. So I'm just happy that we have connected and we've built the relationship that we have, and I look forward to working with you in the future. I want to thank you for coming on the podcast. I think you've delivered some really great takeaways for our audience. And I encourage each of our listeners, all millions of you, to follow up with John offline. He is passionate. That's one thing I will say. He's very passionate about the topic, and his work reflects that passion. So thanks so much for coming on. And we'll hopefully have you on in 6 months or so and get some really cool updates of what you've got going.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Chip. I think we should do that. We'll see how far this evolution is going, a revolution. Thank you so much.
Awesome stuff. Well, thanks again. I'm signing off. This is Millennial NFT, Episode 1, Season 5.